How's it going, everyone? You're listening to Free Kick, the official AFLW fantasy podcast. Today I'm joined by Liam and Jono as we go through the midfielders, one of the most expensive and most exciting lines as we get ready to pick the top eight midfielders, have a look at some of the mid-priced options and discuss the rookies and the cash cows. How exciting. How's it going, specifically Liam?
Oh, I'm going very well, specifically Mel. This is a high energy episode. This is an episode all about points. This is the bulk of our scoring for the year. We have eight to choose from this year. None of this, we've only got five business. We have so many options to pick from. I'm so keen.
Yes. Jono, how are you as well, actually?
Well, I'm glad not to be forgotten. I appreciate that for sure.
Because you didn't get it specifically. That's why.
I didn't. That's for sure. I am very excited. As I said, I think this line has been dominated by five players for a very long time now. So it's very exciting to have, I suppose, a bigger breadth of players we can choose from and I suppose some more mid-price madness coming to the midfield.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the midfield line, we've got 29% of the players listed as midfield, but 43% of the rookies or new players. So there is a lot of cheap options and untested players to pick from in this line, which makes it very exciting. The highest averaging midfielder last season was none other than Laura Gardner, who took out the highest averaging fantasy player as well with her impressive 128.6. So we'll be looking to see if that's the score to beat this season. And the midline is always the most exciting because we see these absolutely bonkers high scores. Laura Gardner, 173 in round 7 against Adelaide last season. I think they might play Adelaide to start off with this season. So we could be in for a real treat if anyone's picking Laura Gardner, but more on that later. Couple of 165s, couple of, like from Riddell and Marinoff, 164 for Bowers. These are the names you know and love. 158 for Jasmine Garner. Like, these are some massive scores we saw last season. So very exciting line. But it does get tricky in the midfield. We have a very handy top eight, top nine highest scoring fantasy players that just kind of sit leagues above the rest. So we've got three players that average more than 120, two that average between 110 and 120, and four between 100 and 110. So that's a nice, snazzy couple of players that'll fit into our premiums. And then below that, there's just a whole lot of kind of mid-price and then a big bottom end for the rookies. So, you know, there's going to be some big concentration up the top, and then it's anyone's game. But maybe to talk us through that, Jono, who have you put as your top eight midfielders this season?
Thank you very much, Mel. Yes, there is a big gap between the top and the bottom, and I think the top five in particular are going to be absolutely no surprise to anyone. So starting us off, number one, I'm going with Ebony Marinoff, the fantasy goat. I know she was knocked off her perch last season, but is undoubtedly the best player of all time in terms of the fantasy score. Has her last three series, if you include finals as well, her last three seasons have been 127.7, 143.1, and 126.5. Absolutely ridiculous numbers. So I see no reason why she won't be absolutely top of the table again in 2026.
Are we just going to gloss over the fact that she's got a new coach? That's the big question, right? You said that there's no reason to doubt. I think that this is the most doubt we've had for Ebony Marinoff in half a decade.
There is. And it is something that I did consider. My question is, there's no Hatchard anymore. Daniel Paredes, or Daniel Ponter, as she's formerly known, no longer alongside her in 2026. Brooke Boileau is gone. I think they just need Marinoff to be the best version of herself, and that is just getting the ball in her hands 24/7. So I imagine there will be a lot of changes at Adelaide this season. We're going to see new teammates running alongside her. I just think she's going to get it done anyway.
I think the question is game style too. Like, it's very clear that Matthew Clark allowed Ebony Marinoff to play the way that she did, that had high fantasy scoring, to constantly be the first tackler, to hit up for short marks and kicks, and a lot of the forward entries for Adelaide through the good times and then later on in the last couple of seasons, the bad times, involved Marinoff rolling around onto her left and getting it in deep to Gould and Ponta. It's a question now of whether or not that's still going to be facilitated. Is it going to be a more, you know, laser-focused scalpel type of offense, or and, you know, in place of Ebony Marinoff's, you know, sledgehammer style of ball movement at times? It would be remiss of me to say that she won't be an elite fantasy scorer, but I'm not certain right now, right, to say that, yeah, it's a guarantee that because these players are out, she'll still score well. I think there's a lot of game plan that still needs to go under the bridge.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see she's going to be top handful for sure, because it is the GOAT we're talking about here, Ebony Marinoff. But yeah, a few question marks as to how high her scoring will be and if she's got a little bit to lose, you know, coming in so high.
Well, I suppose this is the big thing. If you're going to spend this much money, it's a very risky proposition because you need them to be averaging 130 at the gate. But to move on to my second player here, it's another one who I think has the ability to go even higher than she has, but also another that I think there are question marks on. So this is Laura Gardner, who is priced at $1.38 million after a very, very impressive season in 2025. So she's the first player to average more than Marinoff in about four seasons, which is very, very impressive. She had six scores over 140, which is just incredible. And as mentioned before, the highest score of the season last year was 173. And I don't think this fantasy prowess thing is new to her either. She's been rising in average for years and was also an absolute jet in the VFLW for Geelong. So absolutely, this could just be her new normal rather than just a bumpy year. We could be expecting to see, you know, 130 average from here on out. The thing that I worry about is, one, you've got the return of Sophia Hurley and you've got a new coach. In a lot of the games that Sophia Hurley played last year, those are the games that she went sub 100, because I think that they do have a similar skill set. So I suppose there's a little bit of a role imbalance there. And then the other one is the new coach coming in. Are they going to be changing how they play? Are they going to allow Laura Gardner to be, you know, the tackling accumulator that she has been in the last season?
I would say that her biggest downside is the accuracy of her kicking. And that was something that really let down Sydney back end of last year. It's obviously possible that she's worked on it in this offseason. But again, is Colin O'Riordan as a new coach going to prioritise giving Laura the freedom to be in those spaces and look to gain metres and at times be a more inefficient kick at the cost of, you know, someone like Sophia Hurley, who has a very similar skill set, but I would say is a better kick and a more accurate and incisive ball user inside 50. I'm not 100% sure right now. And it's scary. $1.3 million for two players with new coaches, with legitimate reasons to ask questions. Not that I won't start them, just you've got to be honest with yourself that it's not a slam dunk like previously.
Yeah, and they're more than 10 points average above the next lot. So very expensive. If they drop down that 10 points, then you've just wasted a chunk of money in the first couple of rounds. But is anyone going to be brave enough to not start any of them? I don't know. We'll have to see.
The third player on my list then, Liam, is someone you might enjoy a little bit more, because this is a player where there's no question marks on their impact in a footy game. It is the actual GOAT of football, Jasmine Garner. So priced at $1.246 million and actually was a little bit below the others, 116 average last year. But when we look at last year, there's really two blights on her scoring history. The first was a 51 against Fremantle, and it's the reason we don't have Willow on this episode today. There was an ankle injury early in that second quarter that left her stuck on 51, you know, your average quarter time score. And I think that's really pulled down her average. The latter was a 69 against Essendon, which was in an absolute gale. So I think it's not to say that that game, you know, you can just discount it on, you know, that she did play a full game, so we can't really complain about that. But I think if you remove those from her average, those two scores, you get an average of 128.6. Her lower scores were 106, 116, 117. It's actually a phenomenal season, just marred by a couple efforts. So I think Jasmine Garner just keeps going to a new level every season. I see no reason why North Melbourne's going to slow down at all this year. And I think that she's probably one that's, I don't know, maybe even a little underpriced, to be honest.
Underpriced. Yeah. I mean, I think she has the most certainty amongst the top players we've spoken about so far. I think she's a pretty good fantasy lock. Nothing more to add.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. All right, I'll keep going then. I'll stick on North Melbourne just to try and keep the continuity, the success of these pitchers going. Ash Riddell, pick number four, priced at $1.297 million, averaged $120.9 million last year. And also our current reigning AFLW best and fairest. There is nobody that accumulates the footy like Ash Riddell. She set the disposals record for a season last year at 532. And that's 105 ahead of the record, 150 against second place last year. It's absolutely crazy. She also broke the records for meters gained, uncontested possessions, second all-time inside 50 count, and contested possession count. So absolutely phenomenal season. My question with any best and fairest is generally, is it sustainable? Because that is some incredible numbers. And I know that usually we would worry about a tag. I think we've always worried about a tag in the North Melbourne side, but it's just hard to see someone doing that year on year on year.
And it's hard to see someone tagging Riddell over Garner. Because much as Riddell won league best and fairest, Garner is the player that will kick six and have 30. She did it last year. That wins football games 100% of the time. Ash Riddell can have 47 disposals. And yes, North will probably still win, but probably not by as much as in when Garner has 6 and 30. I know that that's a ridiculous comparison, but I think it's interesting. Riddell was certainly down on scoring in finals last year, but I think that's now a trend, like the last three seasons. Her scoring is certainly depressed during the final series. I think it's a case of until someone stops North's game plan and their stoppage work, then it stands to reason that both Garner and Riddell will be 115 plus. It might take Mia King or Ruby Tripodi to go to another level, to thin everyone else out, to give them a chance to accumulate more. But right now, at this point in the preseason, I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see anyone stopping her, but she didn't just beat everyone else in the comp by 105 disposals ever. She also beat her own previous efforts by over 100 disposals. So I guess maybe that's sort of where my head's at. But I do agree. I think Ash Riddell is pretty much a lock for that top four or five spot. I can't really see her dropping away too drastically. And then to round out our top five of the five players that have always been in our top five, and as far as I'm aware, will always be in our top five, we have Kiara Bowers. So a little bit of a veteran now, but, you know, there were a lot of doubters last year saying, you know, she's a bit old, you know, maybe this contested game style that she plays isn't going to hold up with the lower stoppages, but she just keeps getting it done. You know, she had a ceiling score of 164 against Essendon, averaged 112 for the season, and had plenty of massive games in that sort of mid to late period that proved she can just keep doing it year on year.
Now, I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but back half of the year, a score of 92 in round 8, 101 in round 10, and only 80 in round 12. That is three scores that are 15 points below what we would normally expect from Kiara Bowers.
Yeah, so she starts off the season strong, and that's what you want in your starting squad.
I think not so much at the end of every season. I'm talking about someone who is 34, and who has more strapping tape than just about any player in the AFLW on their knees. I think that it's time to start asking questions if it's sustainable, because in that final five-game stretch, Kiara Bowers was not the highest averaging Fremantle player. She wasn't the second highest averaging Fremantle player either, because it was Mimstrom and then, what's her name? Gabby Newton. Those two were both higher averaging in that last five-game stretch. I don't know. Maybe the shine is starting to wear off. I think this could be the start of the downturn for Kiara Bowers.
I mean, that's a big call because, I mean, sure, but I think also at that point of the season, once we got to those low games, to what degree was the season over when they played Adelaide in round 12?
Round 12, I'm sorry, what was that, Mel? Remind me again, Fremantle, could they still make finals?
I think so.
Yes,
right. Another question here.
Elimination final.
We're talking about the 92, the 101, and the 80. What happened in between those rounds?
130 and 120. 130 and 120. Yeah. I know. I'm just.
It's where you pick the stats you want to see.
Talk about 100 and then two sub 100 scores in a five game stretch for Kiara Bowers. I doubt, like she's had maybe one of those stretches in four seasons.
Look, that's why it's fair. I definitely have her fifth for a reason, but I would be surprised if we don't get one more season of Kiara Bowers being the fantasy jet that she is. I'm expecting her to be in the top five still. I'm not necessarily suggesting that we start with her. So that leads us to the next three on the list, who I think there is going to be a lot more difficult to separate them from the rest, but I'm going to do my best here. At number six, I have Charlie Rowbottom. So I think last season was a really, really difficult year for her. There were changes in the ruck and tackle rules, like holding the ball rules, which really hurt her early in the season. I mean, she came out of the box with four holding the ball free kicks against in her first game alone, which really hurts your scoring. And then her tackle numbers were also down, and she also copped an AC shoulder joint injury late in round three, which really just added injury to the insult of the rule changes. So really, really difficult start to the season. But from round six onwards, I think she found a way to adjust to the new game style, and she averaged 111 from that point onwards with a ceiling score of 147 in there. So I think, you know, the Charlie Rowbottom we saw a couple years ago, I think she's going to find her way back to that sort of scoring potential. And even if she doesn't, the opening fixture that they have is against teams that we would traditionally say are contested teams. So the Bulldogs, who were fourth in contested possession rate last year, West Coast, who were second, Geelong, who were 14th, so not so good, but then Port Adelaide, who were the number one contested possession team. So I think these are the teams that she's going to be able to perform a little bit better against. And now it's a very different looking midfield at the Gold Coast. Last season, I think Lucy Single was a big support, Niamh McLaughlin sort of pinch hitting for her first season. But beyond that, it was a very you don't have sort of the A graders that you would expect. Whilst now they have Anne Hatchard to add to the mix, as well as Daisy Darcy. So I think it's going to be a much stronger group, and hopefully she can get a little bit more support from them.
She had the same market share of points last year as she did in her highest averaging season, which is 2023, when I think she averaged near 110, and she averaged 10 points fewer last year. So for those people that are afraid about what Anne Hatchard might do to Charlie Rowbottom scoring, I think there's a case to be made that it's a rising tide that lifts all boats, and the biggest boat at Gold Coast is Charlie Rowbottom. She is still probably going to rise. I think in that season as well was the Claudia Whitford season where she went 95 too. It was still Charlie Rowbottom's best season. I think that, you know, it remains to be seen. It's going to be an extremely inexperienced side for Gold Coast. So it's not a guarantee with the players that they've brought in and they get back from injury that they will be better. They had like 14 players join and they had the world's biggest draft crop. They could be worse this year and struggle even more. But yeah, I think that Charlie Rowbottom, you know, was averaging well above 10% market share of points in the back half of last year and seemed to find a run of form after missing one game.
Yeah, no, completely agree. So that brings us to our seventh player then. I've gone for Mon Conti here, who priced at 1.058 million, is our first player on the list who did not average 100 last year, only averaged the 98.6. But if there was a team that needed a bit of a refresh in the offseason, it was Mon Conti. Richmond just had an absolute shocker of a year last year. Everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong. And this is another player who, aside from, you know, Ellie McKenzie, was really looking for a lot more support in that midfield. So she's done the fantasy averages in the past. She had 106.5 in 2023. And I'm really excited by what the new coach coming in, Jared Donders, can do. I know he's given the Magnets a bit of a shuffle this offseason. We're going to see a lot of change. And we're also bringing in players like Dana East from Fremantle, who I think is going to give a little bit more support in that midfield. I'm also a big fan of what I've seen from Sierra Greaves this preseason. I think she's ready for a big step. And so that's going to be a lot more support in that midfield. They also have a far kinder fixture, you know, off 2023 where they'd made finals. Sorry, off 2024 where they'd made finals. That was a much difficult fixture last year compared to this season. This season, they've got a lot of easy games. They start with Collingwood, the Bulldogs, Essendon, Fremantle, St Kilda, and GWS in the first half of the season. Only one team there made finals last season. So I think it's going to be a much kinder one, one that Mon Conti might be able to score well in.
Yeah, I think when you add to all of that, so the fixture, the additional support, the fact that Richmond can really only go up on the ladder, hopefully from here, with the new coach, there was the two added benefits of the 156 massive ceiling, like top six fantasy score last season, which is absolutely what we want to see. And her average has got quite a few like low scores baked into it, a couple in the 50s, one in the 60s. So it really is all pointing towards ability to get some high scores and raise that average this season. So it could be Moncon season again.
My point is Moncon needs to work out a breaker tag. It's the reason why she's getting floor scores. Once she can do that, she'll be a star. That's it. And that's not just a Moncon thing. That's a Richmond thing. That's her teammates. That's other midfielders. A leap forward in Ellie McKenzie's game might actually prove to be the thing that unlocks Moncon's uber high ceiling. But a 52 against Gold Coast in what should be the greenest of green matchups is why there's big risk on her going massive.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think the tag is something that the whole team needs to contribute to. And I think having the new coach helps there because I think she was previously just kind of left out to dry. And I also think Ellie McKenzie's coming along. I mean, she kicked so many goals in their wins last season. And when she was quiet, Richmond were quiet. So I think hopefully that's one that helps there. Finally, though, I'm going to jump on to our number eight player just because this segment keeps going and I can see Mel is getting very frustrated with my tardiness here. Oh. Georgia Nanscorn is my eighth player here. Averaged 102.3 last year. I don't know if this surprises you guys. I know that we knew that she was coming into the league late after having a career in hockey, but she's actually 34 as well, so the same age as Kiara Bowers. But again, I don't think the signs that she's slowing down are there because she's incredibly consistent. Her tackling has always been fairly good, but took a big step last year. I think she averaged over 10 tackles last year, which is top three in the AFLW. And this year, again, the Bombers have a much better fixture. They start with a tough game against Brisbane, but it really falls away from there. So I think that there are promising signs for Nanscorn. I think Essendon's going to be a team that is bringing quite a few players back from injury. She's going to have a lot more support. They're going to get their hands on the footy quite a bit more. Essendon's also a high possession team when they want to be, when they get the game on their terms. So I'm hopeful that that's something that will benefit Nanscorn this season.
Sounds good to me.
Wonderful.
Name nothing. Okay. Well, that was a very extensive top eight. And like you said, it's really just about the order. There's a clear top five. It's another couple of picks there.
John, I didn't say anything. John, let's talk about the slander of Ella Roberts. Averages 104.8 last year. If you include 141 points in the finals, I think that she has potential to go top five. I think she could be better than Charlie Rowbottom. 14.4% market share is what she did against Carlton in their final earlier this year. And she did that after having clearly been injured 2 weeks prior. I think Ella Roberts has 120 plus potential in her future. I don't know if it's this year, but I just think she could be amazing.
I mean, she is amazing already. There's nothing, I hold nothing against Ella Roberts. The reason I haven't put her higher is because last year she got, 17 best and fairest votes. And I think she had 5 best on grounds in 5 of their 6 wins. And then I think basically if West Coast win, it's because Ella Roberts was amazing. And if West Coast don't win, it's because she was well held. And I think every coach in the competition is now going to be locking down on Ella Roberts this season. It's the only reason that I think we need to worry about it.
But I would, there's just something about it. Like, I feel like Ella Roberts is a better tag breaker than Moncon. Yeah. And is maybe doesn't have quite the same ceiling. But I think it's 110 plus for Ella Roberts this year.
Yeah, she was definitely the first player that I was just outside the eight. And she was the one that I spent the longest deliberating whether or not she should come in.
Okay, now we can talk. Well, now we can go to the underpriced premium. Sorry, it was just like it was so close. I was almost surprised to see Ella Roberts wasn't there. She had to be talked about.
Okay, so we've discussed the top eight plus one, Ella Roberts. Now we go to the interesting section where we talk about the undervalued premium. So who could we see pushing up into that later in the season? We're currently going with approximately people average 80 to 100 or so, so that we've got some bounds here. I think we need a few bounds with the midfielders, otherwise there's just way too many to choose from. So, someone outside of the top nine that we think could be boosted up this season. Well, Ella Roberts, I can see here, was part of your notes, Liam, but do you want to talk about who else you've got?
Yeah, it's Elise Parker. She's priced at 79, so technically outside of the 80 to 100 pounds, but then Ella Roberts was technically outside of the 80 100 pounds as well.
So, 1 point hit the side, sure.
It's fine. So Elise Parker is just value. I think she's an incredible value pick. You know, we've talked about her on this podcast now every single season that we've done it, and every season we've done AFLW Fantasy, Elise Parker has been a point of conversation. She is a consistent mid to high 90s scorer. She has consistently high market share of points. Her points per minute scoring is great. She is capable inside, outside, one of the better kicks at GWS. Clearly their best tackler. Has also the additional benefit this year of being being a player with an extremely high floor. Capable of hit a ceiling. I don't see her needing to be traded out of your side. Unless she is injured later in the season, Elise Parker is going to sit probably somewhere between probably starting your team at about M5 and then end your season hopefully at about M7, M8 by the time you upgrade to other premiums. I think that she's almost a lock.
You've gone really to the essence of the undervalued primos and picked someone who's slightly lower than our range, but really shouldn't be, because that's just where the value and the discounting coming in is. I can't believe she's only priced at 79. That's fantastic value for Elise Parker. I really like that. Another person, though, that I'm also very keen on, and unfortunately, you know, we've got three additional spots in our midfield this season, but it's still not enough to fit all of these players. I'm going with Georgie Paspakis. So priced at 93.8, I think that she is absolutely ripe for some fantasy improvement this season. Last year, she had four scores below 75, so pretty decent floor. But otherwise, six scores bigger than 100 and one score over 120. So that is just some fantastic upside and ceiling we can see there. For that represents at least 10 points of average, pushing her up into the hundreds and competing with the top. She has by far the most running at Geelong. So she is their absolute workhorse there. And she's really lifted her game as well since 2024. So really came into her own in 2025. She also leads the league for centre clearances and is the third for contested possession. So she is incredibly vital in that midfield. She is getting the ball. She's disposing the ball. This is what we want to see from a midfielder. I think that Georgie Paspakis is someone that we've been keen on, or I've been keen on since she debuted and made a very impressive first season. I think that she just keeps getting better and better, and I reckon this is the year that we finally see her inching up into the primos.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely fantastic last year, and it was good to see. I think, I can't remember whether it was a quad or a calf injury that kind of she was playing through in 2024, but it's nice to see her sort of at full flight, because she is just one of the best line-breaking players that you have in the competition, let alone the Geelong team. I'm really curious by what having a new coach in Mick Stanier is going to do for her, because I feel like Stanier is one of those coaches that really loves a role, a dedicated role for a lot of his players. And so, you know, does Paspakis kind of get let loose in the same way she has been? It's going to be really interesting to see.
Yep. The new coaches are really hurting our midfield this season.
there's just a lot, I suppose, we've got to keep tabs on in this preseason. A lot of these match sims that are happening at the moment, and the practice matches that are coming up this weekend. So very, very exciting. I suppose my player that I've gone for as an undervalued primo is another under a new coach this year, Abby Dowrick, who is coming under the new coach Glenn Strawn at Port Adelaide. Now, Abby Dowrick is a terrific tackler and accumulator, but geez, Port's game style has just been the worst thing for fantasy scores, and who knows what Glenn Strawn is going to do. We've seen a little bit of promise coming from that interview we did with Molly Brooksby, with, you know, a few reading between the lines that we got there, which might suggest that we'll be able to have a bit more of a less contested game style going forward. But I think until we see it in the season, it's a bit of a mystery. But Abby Dowrick, so, has incredibly high consistency. She is absolutely their best midfielder. She averages the most disposals, most tackles, had the second most CBAs at the club. She doesn't take many marks, and I think that's sort of part of the game style issue. Port only had two players average more than three marks last season. You compare that to the other South Australian team, they had 10. So I think just like the most simple reversion to the mean is gonna bump her scoring up quite a bit. So she's got a decent ceiling. She had 114 last year as her highest score, but we've seen higher scores in her past. I really think that Abby Darrick is one who could go 100 this year.
I really just hope Glenn Strawn tells Abby Darrick that she's allowed to give 1-2 hand passes and then kick the ball inside 50, because she was so often, yep, Abby Darrick's got the clearance and hoof, 45 metres inside 50. That's how Port Adelaide's game style was built. There was no follow-up points. There was nothing available for anyone else in the midfield, and that killed their scoring completely. We know that Abby Darrick has a ceiling, albeit several seasons ago, and in a different version of the AFLW with very different rules now, but even 3 or 4 marks a game, we know that she's an elite kick. I would be surprised if that's not something that's prioritised in a new game plan. I'm big on this as an option.
Yep. I agree. Oh, we're at the end. Sorry. I don't know where I thought we were. Yeah, Abby Darrick, another one that I was considering, actually. Really good options all around here. We've got a few honourable mentions, which we'll try to keep quick because it's going to be a long episode. Yep, exactly. We've got Gabby Newton. Someone that's probably already in my fantasy side, 109 average over the last 5 games. Just looks like she's going up and up. Maybe the counter to Bowers dropping out of the high fantasy averaging players. We've got Sophia Hurley coming back, as we've already mentioned. Likely breakout candidate. Will be great to see her back in the midfield and watch what that does to some of the other Sydney midfielders. And then we've got Olivia Purcell, who she's priced at 89. That's a discount on her prior average because she only played 2 games last season. So there is the potential for her to kind of grow up to that 99 average potentially, but that did look like a little bit of an outlier. So I think she's one that could have some upside, but we'll have to wait and see a little bit more. And Maddie Purse-Parkis, who has at least 10 points of possible upside. Who here is particularly keen on Maddie Purse-Parkis?
That would be me. I think that Maddie had one of her probably last season, Maddie Purse-Parkis had her worst season at Essendon. She has gone away, talked a lot about the improvements she's looked to do in the off-season around her fitness and around her game plan. I think that she's primed to go back to mid-90s again. Priced at 86, that's 10 points of value. Is it enough, given the volume of options that we have and the fact that rookies will make up more of our midfield than any other line? I don't know. But I think that 96 is on the cards again.
I like it. So over to our mid-priced options. The loose rules, let's see if we've followed them this time. 40 to 80 average, just to create a bit of a trough when we go to the cash cows. I have gone with Sarah Goodwin. So priced at 68.8, I think she is going to be quite an interesting one. We saw her get some more CBA time at the back end of last season, and it really saw her scoring lift. So as she kind of shuffled out of defence into that role, we also know that she has a huge ceiling. 116 and 117 from last season is phenomenal. That's almost double her score, where she's coming in price just under 70. So I love that upside. And there's a really big CBA role gap opening at Adelaide, which we spoke about quite a bit on our Adelaide episode. But with the Adelaide's 4th, 5th and 6th highest CBA rotations from last season not in the game this season, there's going to be a lot more opportunity for more players to rotate through, have a bit of a longer time, have a bit of more of a higher share. And I think Sarah Goodwin is likely to be one of the main recipients of this upside.
Yeah. And I have to say, the fact that her start to the season, which, you know, she was still playing in defence, didn't have that midfield opportunity, isn't priced in, you know, this back half of the season is really what we want. I think there is a little bit of upside here. Yeah, I'm a fan.
And hopefully new coach does not ask Sarah Goodwin to play any tagging or defensive roles. One, it killed her fantasy scoring. And two, she was bad at it. So good on Sarah for being bad at it so you don't get asked to do it
again. We love that. Yeah, yeah, we love that.
Weaponized incompetence, no?
Oh, absolutely. That is weaponized fantasy incompetence. I am all for it. Football-wise, I hate it.
Good on you, Sarah.
It burns my eyes to watch. Fantasy-wise, I love it.
So who have you picked then? Out of the five names you've listed here, which one are you going to talk about? Show some self-control and pick one.
Okay, so for reference, I put a whole bunch of names down, and they kind of speak to the fact that there's some midfield groups that have a bunch of options in them, mainly Carlton, who we might talk about in a minute. And then the other team I wanted to talk about is Collingwood. You could also talk about Port Adelaide, so Piper Window and Sinead Goody. Both mid-priced options we could. But I think Collingwood, it's Mattia Breed and Bree Davey who both speak to me here. I think we've realised that there was a really sore... Well, there was a big issue with Collingwood last year in that they struggled to find enough bodies to put through the forward line and through the midfield. They were really experimenting. Ruby Slicer became a forward in the back half of the year. Ellie Runnels went into the midfield. What they were lacking was a big body tackler, but an explosive player outside of stoppage. So they have Carly Ramos, who is a great defensive stopper option, but doesn't really display that explosion coming out of stoppage. And I think that one of Bree Davey and Mattia Breed can do that. I think the player that is a more tantalizing option for me is Mattia Breed, given the price point. She's so cheap at like 500 and...
Done, yeah.
500K. Like, extremely cheap, comes in with a full season's worth of discount. It was what we saw at the back end of her final season that she played, which was 2024. We saw some games full-time in the midfield with a 99 and a 78. I think that there is a 70, 75 averaging midfielder in here, priced as cheaply as she is. I think the opportunity's there. The counter to this is Bree Davey, who has the pedigree, but I think has more capability as a forward, which is where Collingwood are most sorely lacking.
Yeah, and I think something that gets, I guess, forgotten is that that season may have been like a breakout midfield role for her, but she was carrying that knee injury that she ended up getting surgery for when she came to Collingwood. So I think there's a lot of upside for Mattia Breed. I just really hope we see it because she is such an explosive line breaker.
The question I do have about Mattia Breed, and when I want to see it in the practice matches and the match simulations, is time on ground. Like in the last season we saw at Hawthorn, it was 60, 63, 65, 56, 63. That's her time on ground for those final five games. I would like to see that in the 70s to give me hope that a 75 average is capable. I think she's a points per minute type scorer. I have questions about whether or not I can pick her if she's sitting at low 60% time on ground. I kind of want to open it to the floor, though, on Bree Davey, though. She's got the pedigree. She's been a uber premium or near enough in previous seasons, but that was four or five seasons ago now. She's not looked healthy for 3 years. And is she going to be playing in the forward line or is she going to be spending most of her time in the mids?
I kind of expect her to play more time in the forward line to start the year. I think it's tough with ankle injuries where you've got to spend so much time off your ankle. You just can't keep that long-term fitness going up that you need for your, you know, that midfield role. So I imagine they'll start her in the forward line and probably move her towards the midfield as the season goes on. I also think she's going to be severely underpriced. I think she will go up. I'm not sure I can do it because she's burned me a few times now. So I think I've just got to opt out of that one and say good luck to those who go with her if she does succeed.
She's got too many red flags to make the upside enjoyable. Like you would be, if I picked Bree Davey, I would expect that I need to get upside from this given how risky she feels. And if I didn't get it, I would be pretty pissed off. So I don't know. I think it's a... I would need to see a little bit more before she became more of a lock. And by then, she's probably lost her upside.
It's a tough pick, though. I can see why people want to do it.
If we had a draft platform to do, it's a, I'm happy for that to be someone else's problem. Someone else's draft pick.
Yeah. Could be great and good on them. They get that. But yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I mean, we glossed over the Carlton of it all. Jono.
Yes. So when I was picking my player, I'd seen how blatantly Liam was not sticking to our rules. And so I thought, you know what? Someone between 40 and 80, I'm going to go to an average of 60 on the dot. And the closest I could find there was Paxi Paxman, who we talked about too much last season. So I went down the list and saw Ali Drennan, who's inactive. And then I went one more down and I found Claudia Whitford, who is a fantastic mid-pricer for this season.
That's a great way to pick your fantasy players.
Exactly, exactly. No, but Claudia Whitford's just come down from the Gold Coast to Carlton and is incredibly underpriced due to a bevy of issues. Last season, she had preseason hamstring issues, early season calf issues, and then ended her season in round 7 with a hamstring tear. So very, very unfortunate season for her. Didn't only played, I think it was the 5 games in the end, and had unfortunately poor scores due to these injuries. So she had a 37 early in the season whilst hampered with a calf issue and ended up sort of playing through it and missing the following week. And then in round 7, she had a 30 from just 16% time on ground. So is very, very cheap for us. But if we look at her prior seasons, in 2023, she averaged 96.7, was the club best and fairest for the Gold Coast. And then the season after in 2024, she had an early game concussion that brought her average down one round, but if we just ignore that game, then she averaged 88.3 that season. So I think this is a player who has 30 to 35 points upside just simply baked into the price, and you don't need to look any further. The only question mark on her really is the incredibly large midfield group at the Carlton Blues.
I love it. You have no reason to look any further. But I'm going to look a little
further.
But
if you did.
You would see concern.
Yeah. Look, I think even if she doesn't go the 35 high, she's still going to go at least 15 to 20. So I think the upside is there. But let's talk about this Carlton midfield group, because you've got Mimi Hill. You've got Abby Mackay. Last season, I don't know if you guys saw it, Lily Goss was actually one of the highest CBA rotators they had. You have Keely Sharar, you've got Maddie Geeran, you've got Aron Fitzpatrick, you've got Dana Finn, you've got Brooke Vickers, and then also coming along from Adelaide this season in trade is Brooke Boileau. All of those players, with the exception of Brooke Boileau, because she was at a different club, had pretty significant midfield minutes in at least one game, if not way more. So I have no idea how they're going to manage this group. I mean, I can see some players that maybe fall out of the rotation, but even still, you've got a very large group to work with.
Are you of the opinion that Brooke Boileau may have stayed at Adelaide if she knew that Chelsea Brandon and Daniel Ponta weren't going to play this season? Because she moved for opportunity
and now she's gone into a midfield
that is more stacked and has left the team that is now dying for her position. Not dying, but
I think Brooke Boileau incredibly believes in herself, and she doesn't want a position because of vacancy. She wants a position because she earned it, and that's what she's done here.
I don't know. I don't know if I need grind set midfielders in my fantasy team. I think I'll take the cheap points.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a struggle. It does give you pause for thought on Brooke Boileau. I think Claudia Whitford, even with all those players there, I think she still walks into this midfield as one of their primary rotators, because I think a lot of them can play other positions as we've seen in the past.
First centre bounce, round 1, Carlton against St Kilda on the Sunday afternoon. Who are Carlton's midfielders?
I'm saying it's Whitford, Mackay, and probably Goss. I reckon you've got Sharar and Finn on a wing. You've got Geeran and Fitzpatrick at half forward. That's my guess there.
And Mimi Hill, what?
Mimi Hill off halfback. Off halfback or something. She's done halfback before. I definitely think that like the days of 85% CBAs are no longer there for Claudia Whitford. But if she doesn't get 60%, I'd be surprised.
Fair enough. I don't know either. I'm just confused by the strategy of the whole thing. Because the other player that we're not talking about now, because she's forward, but Sophie Mackay. And McKay's younger sister was drafted as a mid forward. Now, had a great season goal kicking, particularly in the finals and in the back half of the year as a forward. But I would be shocked if she's not playing midfield at some point in the next 18 months, because that's what she was kind of drafted to be doing. The same could be said for Lila Keck, who kicked 4 in the VFLW this past weekend as well. Also a mid forward in her junior career. Like, Carlton have a bevy of talent, but some fascinating strategy.
When you've already got 8.
It's a good time to be a Carlton fan.
If you've already got 8 or so running through, just chuck a couple more in. Like, what's another rotation or 2? Keep them coming. Not great for fantasy, but surely great for Carlton. And a couple of honourable mentions we've got here. Sinead Goody is coming into her third season. She's priced at 62, but she is just such an elite footballer. And she had 2 scores in about the 90s last season, so it looks like she's got a lot of headroom on her. And Neve Kelly, based on the large gaps coming in Adelaide this season, there she might have a bit more freedom in the midfield. She's great at her running and disposals on the wings, so that can only be good for fantasy scoring, and priced at 57.
Another player that I could throw in there, and I probably should have mentioned earlier, as a potential scorer, is Ellie Runnels, who I interviewed a few weeks ago. Had a game with 12 tackles, another one with 7 tackles when thrown into CBAs. I think she provides a bit of running and dash that is lost now that Tani, well, I just don't know if they've kind of got it right now. I don't think they've got speed. And so I think that Ellie Runnels can provide that. You know, the 42 that she had the week before she went, I think she might have even had CBAs that week too against West Coast, is a bit alarming given she's priced above 60. But, you know, we're in the price bracket. I won't be shocked.
Great. Well, that is a lot of mid-priced options for us to choose from. And now over to our final section, the cash cows. So this is anyone averaged under 40, new players, rookies, etc. Someone who's going to make us a bit of money during the season. And as we know, there's plenty to choose from on the midfield line. Jono, you've picked a player that I'm also quite interested in. Why don't you tell us about Chloe Bowne?
Yes, Chloe Bowne. We've talked a lot about Adelaide and their sort of midfield hole that they're going to have to fill this season. And I think they've drafted very, very specifically for this. Pick 5 in the FOW draft. Chloe Bowne looks an absolute talent. She was the best and fairest winner in the Coates Talent League. She averaged over 29 disposals, 4.6 marks, 5.7 tackles, 5.7 clearances, 7.2 inside 50s, and had a whopping 125 fantasy point average, which I haven't... There's not like a collated list, but I've been going through a lot of the rookies. I haven't found anyone who's averaged higher. So I think a very, very strong candidate here for your rookie bench. She also averaged 110 fantasy points in the AFLW Under 18 Championships. And in the match sim against Frio last week, she did play in the midfield. I know it was just a match sim, and I think at one point they were running 3 rookies through the midfield, but Coach Ryan Davis was very, very positive after the match, saying she was terrific, very clean, and her contest and aerial work were a highlight, but also complimented her contested game and her ability to hit the scoreboard. So I think really she's ticking all boxes early this preseason, and if she keeps that roll up through the practice games and the match sim to come, then I think we're going to see her lining up in round 1.
I absolutely love it. She seems like such a lock for that midfield rookie position. And to complement pick number 5 in the AFLW draft that you've spoken about, I've gone with Ava Usher at the Gold Coast Suns, pick number 4. She's coming a little bit more expensive as well, being such a high draft pick at 270, but I think it'll be worth it. We heard from the interview earlier this preseason with Lily Mithen that it's looking like Ava is going straight into the midfield and is likely to be someone that we see starting in round 1. And it's no 125, but 88 average in the Coates League is also a very decent score. So I think that she's coming in with some fantasy scoring potential there, noted for her strength and speed, which is what we want to see for someone who's breaking out in the midfield. I think that she has high likelihood to start and then high likelihood to make an impact. And Liam, round us out with your 2 picks.
Okay, fine. I'm sorry. I came to the run sheet after other people put their names in, so I just put bulk names in. Sorry, I don't want the people to have more information. All right, you guys went with pick 5 and pick 4. I'll go with other high draft picks. I'll go with Sonny Lappin, also a high draft pick, and then Kira Yerbury, who was pick 3. Both look to be filling acute needs for both their sides. Sonny Lappin, 107 average at the under 18s. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that Ava Usher wasn't picked for. That was Sonny Lappin.
Yeah.
I think Ava Usher may have been like a little bit later in the draft. That. So we nearly had them in a row. But you had me questioning my research.
Well, me too, and alas.
Yeah, Sonny Lappin, 107 average at the under 18s in 2025, 91 in the Coates League with the Suns Academy. Looks to be the complete modern midfielder, explosive, capable by hand and by foot, and there is a desperate need for more talent on the Gold Coast. I don't know if she'll start in the midfield right away. It sounds like Ava Usher may have a bit more of an inside track to be the full-time inside mid, but I would not be surprised if wherever Sonny Lappin is playing, she's averaging 50-plus right out of the gate. Yerbury has a lower average at the under 18 champs, only 83, but a 94 average at the Swans Academy in the Coates League, not GWS Academy, the Suns, the Swans. So was poached early. I think she's going to be an in-under player. And again, this is another team where I would be shocked if a Brodie Mowbray type player is getting bulk midfield minutes over Yerbury, given the gulf in draft capital spent between them. And I think that there are a lot of outside runners now at the Suns. I suspect that it's a need for a secondary inside extractor. That's what's really missing in their midfield group. Yeah, I think both will be popular. They're both obviously expensive, but thanks to the, you know, the powers that be giving us a whole bunch of extra cash and some cheaper rookies, them both being under 300k, I think you can fit all four of Bowne, Yerbury, Lappin and Usher in your midfield.
Absolutely. And if you want some more variety, got a couple of honourable mentions here, but I will defer to whoever has jotted these down to elaborate.
Okay, yeah, that would be me, because I couldn't resist putting more names down. So Mia Russo, just a name to throw out there. I think about an 80 average of the under 18 champs, but does sound like she is impressing so far at West Coast training. The one name that I think is absolutely fascinating, and it's not someone who went in the draft. It is someone that didn't go in the preseason draft. It is someone who is an injury replacement player at Adelaide. So yes, we're going to talk about the Adelaide midfield again, and it's Juliet Kelly. Average 30 disposals, 2.3 marks, and 7.5 tackles in the waffle. And that is for 110 fantasy points this year. And then last year, she averaged 22 disposals, 2.5 marks, nearly 10 tackles for 98 fantasy points. She is still only 19. So has elite fantasy scoring pedigree. I am shocked that he took her so long to get onto a list. If she plays, she is an elite fantasy scorer out of the bat. Like, you know, she has that pedigree already. She may not be there right away. Obviously, she's come to training later than almost everyone else on Adelaide's list. When she plays, she's a scorer. Plain and simple.
Like it. One to look out for.
Yeah.
Well, let's run through who is an absolute lock in our sides already. So we've discussed a lot of different players, but across all lines, who are you definitely starting with? Specifically, Liam.
I think...
Thank you. Thank you for being specifically thrown to. Jono, you weren't about to speak at all. No. I would say that locked in for me is Elise Parker, Claudia Whitfitt, Ava Usher, and Chloe Bowne.
Okay, very fair. I was just going to pick one and go with Ash Riddell, but there is definitely more than one locks in my side. I am also very highly convinced of Ava Usher and Chloe Bowne as the rookies to pick. And they're already in my side, but also Claudia Whitfitt feels like a must. So bit of consistency there. And Jono?
I think for me, very similar. I've definitely got Parker, Whitfitt, Bowne and Ava Usher. The only other one that I think I'm almost certain to start with is Jazz Garner. I just can't see how she's not going to be one of the top three this year, let alone top five. She's probably the only one in that top five I am confident on. And I think for captaincy options, I think she'll be in my side.
I like it.
That went well for Willow last year.
Yeah. But Willow is notorious for picking someone just a little bit too early. So picking them the following season is almost certainly a good strategy.
Oh, yes. What we should do is go back and listen to last year's recommendations from Willow because they'll be relevant now.
100%. 100%.
Well, that was our midfielder review episode, a nice long one, lots to talk about, lots of names to be jotting down. Follow us on socials at FreeKickWPod. We're on Twitter and Instagram for all of the latest. If you want to read more about the top eight midfielders we've discussed here, check out our AFLW article, which will be online at AFLW and AFL websites now. We are continuing our preseason content with the line reviews. We've got the forwards episode coming up next, which will also be a great one because we've got the mid-forward players chucked in there as well. So join us for forwards later. And then to hear our club-based reviews, head over to the Free Kick stream on Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts. We've got interviews with players from every club. We break down a bit of a review on how that club went last season, what we expect from them this season, and the top five fantasy picks by club. If club level analysis is what you want, we've got heaps over on our Spotify and also more on our Substack, an article to go with each club. Go check it out. There's endless content this preseason. And yeah, and we'll chat to you later.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Were you trying to say something later?